Welcome to Inside Out Radio. My name is Mark Spies. Our show is sponsored by the brand experts at 800 Degrees, and you can find us at 800degrees.com. My co-host, producer, and the guy who actually makes this thing run like a radio show is Andy Lowe. Andy, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing good now that all the pressure's on me to make sure the show goes right today. I'm just glad you got here this morning. I get a text from you this morning, and it's a photograph of a parking lot on 285. I was a little worried you weren't going to make it today.
Yeah, I was too, and I said right before we started, I think my heart rate was higher in the car than riding the bike this morning, and it didn't help, you know, changing lanes and honking. I don't know if you guys figured that out. It actually doesn't work.
Yeah, and
have you figured that out?
But we still keep trying it, right? You know,
yeah,
definition of insanity. But the other downside, I understand, you didn't even get the payoff. Like at the end, you didn't even get to see what caused all this delay. Just all of a sudden, it went and it was over.
No,
Very anticlimactic.
I think that's unfair. If you sit in traffic for 25 minutes, you should get to see the cause. I mean, I think there's that bent, you know, that part of us that wants to see the car on the side of the road with the crushed bumper, the flat tire, something to justify, you know, how we lost that 15 minutes of our life.
Well, somebody with a cell phone had to get a picture, had to get a video today. So if you're out there listening, you got a shot of what happened on 285 this morning, tweet it to us. We'd love to see what happened. Mark did not get a chance to get his payoff this morning. We'd like to reward him. So send that in. All right. There you go, Mark.
All right. Well, great. All right. Our show is the show Inside Out Radio is committed to better understanding the changes in the marketplace and really how those are affecting how today's most successful companies are building brands. And we've got a great show today. We've got a full house. We've got three guests, Pamela Adams, the Chief Connection Officer with BizLink Center, and Natasha Davis-Bowen, who is the, I'm going to get this right, Business and Marketing Strategist with Visionary People. And last but not least, only because, you know, I'm a gentleman, is David Schmidt, VP of Sales with ExactSource. So how are you guys doing?
Doing awesome. Fantastic.
Doing awesome. Fabulous.
All right. And sticking with the gentleman theme, I'm going to start my questions with the ladies and make David wait until the very end.
Nice.
Which will only be a few minutes. All right. So, Pamela, let's start with you. And BizLink Center.
Mm-hmm.
I like the name. In the naming world, we would describe that as a high descriptive,
okay,
as opposed to associative. I get it. It's got business, it's linking, and there's a center.
Fantastic.
So that's what I got from it. But I want to hear where your head is. This is about a year old business, I understand.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, tell us a little bit about BizLink Center.
Well, and I'm glad you got it, and that's exactly what I wanted to get across with that. Actually, I started BizLink Consulting Group back in 2001, and just through my different life experiences and business experience. I'm a serial entrepreneur, so I've started a lot of different things in businesses. But with that, it was all about consulting and technology coaching and strategy and web design services. And after that, I went on to be the regional director with Constant Contact because I taught all the email marketing seminars throughout the state. Did that for 4 years. In the midst of that time, I had always wanted to have some type of training center and a resource center for small businesses. So after doing so many, I spoke to over 14,000 guests and attendees at events and talked to a lot of small businesses and really saw what their needs were and saw that it wasn't being met yet. So that brought back to mind what I wanted to do with the training center. And then now that co-working became popular about 6 years ago, where businesses are starting to work in open spaces as opposed to in some of the virtual office spaces or from their homes. So with that, I said, it's time to get it started. I was looking for a name. When we're talking about branding, I was looking for a name, and you know, we were thinking a lot of different names, and I said, you know what? I already have a name, BizLinks, because that's still what it's all about, is about linking the businesses to each other, so let's make it the BizLink Center. So that's kind of how it came about with the name of it, and then, of course, we had a brand started with BizLinks. A lot of people already knew me through BizLinks, so it was just a nice transition to then have the center be an element of that.
So the idea of co-working, is that the next generation of shared workspace?
Exactly. Exactly. With co-working, what's happening is because the economy, so many more businesses are starting up. They're trying to work out of the coffee shops and the bookstores. Of course, working from home is not for every business. So with that, you know, they started looking at virtual office spaces, but it's really a little bit more than what businesses need in some scenarios. Once you've kind of built up your home-based business and then you're ready to kind of get out there and then own an office space, but not necessarily want all of that overhead, it's a great opportunity. But there's an in-between green area that a lot of people were not being served at. So with that, that's where the open workspace comes into play. So they can have desks. They don't have to have a dedicated desk, but they can. We have both options. But instead of going to the coffee shops and bookstores, they're able to come in a professional environment that was designed for them.
You know, it's interesting. Yeah, I started my business about 10 years ago, mm-hmm. so we looked at that. And back then, it was mostly the shared workspace.
Exactly.
And so, you know, paid attention to the category over the years as, mm-hmm. you know, it's always an option, mm-hmm. you know, whether you lease a space,
right.
stay in the house, you know, or somewhere mm-hmm. in between. And it strikes me that this is a category that is almost recession-proof.
Yes.
And correct me if I'm wrong, it seems that when money's good, mm-hmm. you can get out of the basement or out of the spare bedroom mm-hmm. and go get that that shared workspace or
right.
that co-working space.
Mm-hmm.
And when money's tight, mm-hmm. you don't want to lease the space, buy the building,
right.
rent, et cetera,
exactly.
and you do the shared workspace
right.
or co-work space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a happy medium for business because, again, I love my home office as well, but you got to get out of that home office sometimes. You got to get out there. And the benefit that you get out of the shared workspace compared to just having that private office is the collaboration. So you're able to meet with other businesses. You're able to toss ideas around. So we kind of have the etiquette of the space. If they have their headphones on, their head down in work, don't bother them. But if they don't, then they're open to collaborating with the other businesses, tossing around ideas. So then it becomes your little water cooler as well.
So there's if you've got a space with, you know, designers and salespeople and mm-hmm. writers and, you know, every different type mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. Entrepreneur mm-hmm. in there, I would assume that a lot of these folks don't know how they could collaborate with that person at the next desk or the next mm-hmm. office, whatever mm-hmm. it is. So just creating the space to do that, I think, would get halfway there. But is there anything that you guys do to facilitate that, to
absolutely.
Make those connections?
Absolutely great. And you're right. And that is a missing piece that some of the spaces miss out on because they are just the space. Where we're a little bit different, and I don't know if we're ahead of our time. It feels like it sometimes because it is a lot to get across to businesses to understand it. But what we like to do is be that catalyst for the businesses. So, for example, we have a liaison. We call our members connectors. So we have a whole theme going on because we're big on branding as well. So we call our members connectors, and because our tagline is where businesses go to connect. So we have a liaison that actually meets with each member and spends time to learn about their business, learn about their needs, what they have to offer others, and then what they need from others. And then that way, we help them make the connections with each other, so we introduce them to each other. And then we're always about what services do the businesses need to help them grow and build their business, and then tap into the members. So members' businesses are able to grow through their connection with the center because we're constantly out there referring them, utilizing them for the services that the center actually offers.
Well, what are some of those services? I mean, you know, outside of the traditional, okay, here's the space, mm-hmm. Here's a meeting room, here's a projector, here's, you know, maybe access to
right.
the Wi-Fi, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other services that can be incorporated into the business that members receive?
Absolutely. It's kind of my job every morning to think of, well, what else do the businesses need? So we have administrative services, web design services, marketing services. Natasha, for example, is one of our sponsors at the center, and offering her marketing services to the members is so important with helping them learn how to grow and build their business more effectively. We have a consultant that's on the sales side of things. So again, tying all those businesses in, so we don't have to know it all, but we have the connectors that do and the sponsors that do, so then they're able to offer that. We also actually even have at the center a studio for BizLinks TV, and we put on different online streaming shows. And then we help the businesses that want to learn to get out there to do that, to grow their business through doing their own show as well, if that's something that they want to do. But businesses can actually come in, rent the studio space, do their own videos, help them grow their business by putting it online and putting their information out there online. Or they may want to do their some clips that they want to do. If they're a speaker, they may want to do some video clips to put on their website. So we think of all the different little services that businesses need. One of our shows is called That's My Biz. They have a 15-minute interview with me that they can then take that video and put it on their website so they can show that they've been interviewed, not try to do that direct sales pitch.
So how do you find, or I guess it might even be, how do people find you? How do
okay.
you find these entrepreneurs, the people that, whether they know it or not, want to be connected to other like entrepreneurs?
You just go peek in basement windows,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. You know, we walk around, hand out those cards.
Are you working in there?
Exactly. Come work with Yes.
It's funny. I drive through my neighborhood, and you can see, like, you know, during the day, who's
right.
home.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that guy works from
right,
home.
Exactly.
She works from home.
Exactly.
You can just tell.
Oh, when I go and get my bagel in the morning, if I see someone sitting there with their laptop, I'm passing them a business card and stop for a couple of minutes and go, you know, there's a more professional environment.
Oh,
come here
good.
And get your bagel. We want you to still give them business. But then come on over to center so that you can work a little bit more. But we do all of the various guerrilla marketing techniques. We put it all out there. Social media, of course, a lot of search engine optimization. I'm really excited that more and more people are coming in. I always ask them, how did you hear about us? And a lot of people are saying on the internet. And of course, I have to drill down a little bit more and say, okay, exactly where? Was it a specific website? Did you do a search? What'd you search for? So the efforts that we've put in regarding our search engine optimization has really helped us a lot. And more people are just finding us because they're just doing a search for event space or for meeting space or co-working in Duluth.
All right. So when these people find you, do you find that they're also looking at your competitors? And if so, how do you beat those guys? How are you different?
Yeah, sometimes. A lot of times not, just because we have really set ourselves apart. A lot of the other co-working spaces in Atlanta, we've gotten together and had a couple of meetings where we talk about how can we collaborate together. We really don't see each other as competitors because it's so location-based as well.
Right.
So it's really about what businesses, when you're talking about the workspace, what businesses are in, you know, the five-mile radius, really, that want to come on a regular basis and work. What really sets us apart, though, is we have visitors from everywhere because of all the different types of events that we put on. So I've really found from meeting with the other co-working spaces that we're really almost more in that event and meeting space that happens to have co-working space in it, so that we're able to really branch outside of our immediate area. So that's really where a lot of the social media and the search and optimization comes in handy for us, because people are looking for meeting and event space as well.
So I would imagine if the potential client looks at all the competitors, at the very least, a tiebreaker has to be a poken. All right. Well, I got the gist of it. I read a little bit about a poken. Tell me what a poken is, does,
okay.
and how I've lived without one.
Okay.
And why I need to get one.
Where have you been? The poken is called a digital business card, and is this cute little key fob, and it has a USB on it. So when two people have pokens, they touch, and then you actually plug it into your USB drive, go into your account. You have a nice little timeline that shows you when you met that person. So you may remember, you know, I met them last week, but I don't remember what their name was. You can go look at your timeline and see when you met them. It also connects you with any of their social networks, all their contact information. When they keep it up to date, it keeps you up to date as well. So you'll see it a lot of networking events and at conferences especially, because it's a great way to network. It's a fun way to network. So instead of passing that business card and then having to go back and key it all in, you actually now have an apparatus where you can touch it. It's something where you can say, hey, let's high four. It helps people that
high four,
are nervous
yeah.
when it comes to networking. So they're able to, they really go up to people more because they have something in common already. And then when they touch it, they have the information. They don't have to worry about trying to get that information. They can actually have a real conversation.
It's a little bit like the iPhone has the Bump app.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very similar concept to it.
Yeah. You know, I always thought the Bump
app. But then everyone has to have an iPhone, right?
That's the thing. Yeah. And I always thought that those apps would work great if it had a near field communication.
Mm-hmm.
So if you knew if someone else had it, because I've tried to use it a handful of times.
Yeah.
And either they don't have an iPhone or they don't have the app,
right.
and you've got that awkward minute where you try to explain what you're trying to do with your phone.
Exactly. And near-field communication is exactly what it is. That's the technology that they're using for the poken.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's growing. So now they even have where you can have little tags, poken tags. So if you're at a conference and you're an exhibitor, you can have little tags at your table, and someone that has a poken can then go scan that tag as well. So it's for other information, your PDF files and documents and things like that, as well as contact information now. So it's really growing.
That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to come back in a couple minutes, and we're all going to chat, but I'm going to jump to away for a second. If someone wants to get in touch with you directly, what's the best way to reach you?
They can reach us at connect@thebizlinkcenter.com, and that's thebizlinkcenter.com, and they can find us on the website as well.
Excellent. Stick around for a couple minutes, and we'll
absolutely.
I'm sure we're going to have more questions for you. So, Natasha.
Yes.
Natasha Bowen or Davis Bowen, you're a business and marketing strategist, and I'm looking at your card, and you transform vision into reality. That is a very high bar to set.
Yes, it is.
So tell us a little bit about specifically what you do and how you do that.
Well, basically what I do as a business and marketing strategist, I help companies that are looking to get in front of their ideal audience or grow their company. I tell people I take away the frustrations of developing and marketing. What we do, basically, we drill down really deep into the structure of the organization, the layout of the organization, and also process. And it allows us to see where they're wasting time, wasting money, wasting resources. And then we look at putting in place strategies to eliminate that and to improve it. Our whole goal is to increase revenue, save time, and grow the company. So that's on the business development side. And then for the marketing side, what we do is we look at how is the company being positioned? Are you being positioned in the right audience, in the right place? Are you using the right message? Sometimes you can use the wrong message and get the wrong clients, or you can use a message and you're not getting anyone at all. You know, it's not enough to tell people how good you are. It's really, do you actually communicate that in your verbiage, in your literature, in your publications, and the website? So we look at ways to enhance marketing, again, increasing revenue, saving time, and allocating resources to the right direction.
What's the biggest challenge you've seen when you first start working with these clients? You mentioned frustrations. What do you see as the frustrations?
Some of the biggest frustrations I find is some companies, and it goes on any level, small, medium, large, independent, they think they don't need it. Or they've been applying some really interesting tactics that are not working. And they're wasting a lot of energy and a lot of money. So it's a matter when you go in, they want you to come in, but then they're like, well, we've done a good job. And it's like, okay, well, how come your phone isn't ringing? Or, right. You know, how come you don't have a better revenue or your profit margin? So the biggest challenge is cleaning up what has already been put in place, because it's probably not accurate. And that's usually the biggest challenge. Even something as simple as what's the brand that you've been putting out online? What have you been communicating online? And if you've been communicating opposite to what you've been doing, you got to go in and clean all that up, because now you have to retrain the minds of your audience. Right. And majority of the time, this is the part that makes people uncomfortable. People drop off, which they're supposed to, because you've tailored the conversation and you've customized the communication to meet the needs of the audience that you're trying to reach. So the people that, oh, you don't do this? Oh, I don't want to. Okay, well, I don't need to stay with you guys then.
Right,
so
right. They
drop off, and, you know, most companies, they get nervous because, like, we're losing people. It's like, no, they never paid you anyway, so
you're not really
losing that much, and just saying that in a nice way. But that's one of the biggest challenges, just taking out the old and coming in with the new, because most people, when you start to make change, things will fall off. It's inevitable. You're going to lose the things that are not profitable. And that makes most companies uncomfortable, because they're like, well, we have them. We don't want to lose them. Well, you can't convert them because they don't want what you have.
I think one of our favorite clients over at Turner, as they were repositioning one of the networks, mm-hmm. Looked at the network and said, you know, the history of it was that all of the programming, when you look at the whole thing, there was something for everyone.
Right.
And on the surface, that seemed like a great thing. Mm-hmm. But what they found is they were trying to be everything to everybody.
Yeah.
And as she put it, in the end, we were nothing to no one.
Right.
And, you know, there are great examples like that. Apple, for a while, mm-hmm. had 4% of the PC, or the home computer, the personal computer market space.
Yeah.
And, you know, Gateway, IBM, Dell, all these guys mm-hmm. were crushing them in sales.
Tearing them up.
There was no differentiation. They were seen as wind boxes. There was no margin. There was no stickiness, no loyalty.
Yeah.
And they carved out who they wanted, mm-hmm. and they focused on a category, and they built the brand that way. But that, you're right, it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
So you see that as one of the initial challenges. Mm. Is that in limiting what the clients are doing, or limiting in who they're working with as as their client or their customer, or both?
It's both. It's both. Because if you go in and the concept of limiting just makes everyone nervous.
Sure.
So we always convert that. It's all about wording. It's what you say. You know, I don't want to make a proposal with you. I want to do a service of intention or an agreement. You know, I don't want you to lose anything. Here's what you're going to gain. Because, see, people like to gain things, you know. Even when you don't want to, you know, you're not trying to lose weight. You're actually trying to gain sexiness or gain something else, you know. So at the end of the day, it's not really what you're losing, but what you're gaining. And that's what people buy. People don't buy the loss. They buy what you gain. So when I tell people I'm taking away your frustration, what are you gaining? You're gaining profitability. You're gaining time. You're gaining, you know, peace of mind. You're gaining more customers. You're right. gaining more order, more profit. So it's not what you lose, but what you gain. So when I sit down, it's when it, you know, you start outlining, this is their pain points, their pain points. Every business fits one of two categories, pain or passion. That's it. And either you need to learn to appeal to what the pain points are, or you have to learn to appeal to what the passion is. But you have to know which what your business is. And I appeal to pain, the frustrations of everything else. So I have to know how to communicate that. And it's really what they gain back, not really what they lose. So when I change the communication and the verbiage to say, hey, here's what you're going to get, they're like, oh, thank God. That makes just so much more sense. Right. Where do I sign? I'm like, right here.
Well, it's funny, you know, in sales, the classic, you know, there's the make them sick, make them well.
Right.
You know, you point out the problem and then you give them the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And in sales 101, they always teach you, don't just give them the, what is it, the feature.
Right.
It's got to pass the so what test.
Yeah.
You can list all day long
yeah.
the things you're going to do,
yeah.
but if you don't tell them why it matters,
mm-hmm.
It's ignored.
It
they don't hear it. And then, mm-hmm. you know, the classic consumer marketing positioning statement, it's, you know, for the so-and-so, who needs what,
mm-hmm.
we are the blank, and it finishes with so that.
Yeah.
And that's the emotional hook.
Yeah.
And, you know, for FedEx, it's so that the package arrives nice. On time and you don't get fired.
That's it.
Because it's, you know, when you're shipping that thing, you don't care about their logistics and all that, you
who
know,
cares?
Their great computer system. You just want to know that when that CEO hands you the package, you're not going to get fired when, right. you know, the next day.
Because
it didn't get there on time.
Exactly.
And you saved a buck and went with, you know, whomever.
Exactly. I agree.
That's a hard thing for, you know, for a lot of companies to... you know, to get over,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's figuring out what the pain point is and, mm-hmm. you know, really defining what it is they're after.
Right.
You know, you always hear, well, we want increased sales. Why?
Why?
Well,
yeah.
we need more revenue. Well, is
Why?
It more customers or more, you know, more share of wallet of yeah. your existing customers?
Right. So I've had conversations where, you know, I've met with companies and like, oh, we've got to increase our revenue by $15,000 or 15,000 customers. And then when they say, okay, no, we just need more money. But why? You know, what do you need to accomplish with that? And one of the biggest things that I found is that when the money is sloppy, everything else is sloppy. And that's one of the big things I found when we sit down and we do our assessment, which is a collaborative business session. And we sit down, we do the assessment. And what you start finding is the money is sloppy. And if the money is sloppy, the foundations and the organization, the process, the throughput, everything, it gets really sloppy. And because you don't know what you're doing, and then you start throwing things around, even with marketing. You know, people start putting an ad here, an ad there. I'm going to put up a billboard. I'm going to do that. But half of the companies don't track it to know what happened. Huge company, that's what happened on a social media site. They were pouring millions of dollars into advertising on a particular site. Don't call any names, but it's on a particular site. This huge company, millions of dollars. No one was tracking it. And then they woke up 4 or 5 years later. It's like, my God, we haven't made any money, or it's not working, or no one's coming by way of this channel.
Yeah.
So that's what we do. Do a drill down assessment on what are you doing and why.
I read a little bit about that. Someone posted that on
mm-hmm.
Facebook.
Mm-hmm. It's his show.
So, yeah, and I don't think Zuckerberg's sweating it too bad.
No.
So, what's changed in the past couple of years with the recession? What are you having to do differently as the economy has changed?
You know, one of the things I had to do differently, and I was sharing with Pamela a couple of years ago, I remember when everything really started to hit and I got complacent. It was right at that point where I got complacent. The phone was ringing all the time. I was out in meetings all the time. Oh, I was
rocking.
Better than wheat bread. You know, it was the best thing. And then when the recession hit, all of a sudden, the phone stopped ringing as much. Not everybody wants to book. No one wants to pay. And I'm like, what's going on? And I remember coming to the screeching halt where I ran face first into a wall. And I had no clients. I had nothing going on. I was like, this is not cute.
This isn't why I started
this business. Right. This is not going to work. I got to eat. You know, I got this nasty habit. I like to live in a house. So I realized that the things that I used to do, I have to do that, but then I have to amplify it by like 10. So as opposed to where I would just probably put something out there and just it'll start to gather enough attention and people come in. I actually have to really get out there. I have to go out and network a lot. I have to sit on boards. I have to communicate with people. And then I have to also tighten up the way I communicate to them. See, because everyone's looking for the best deal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and everybody's going to nickel and dime you. And so you have to be able to say, hey, listen, here's the value. Here's what you're getting. Hands down, here's what you're getting. And I won't vacillate back and forth with you because then you're going to think I'm not really that good.
Sure.
You know, so I had to learn that I have to get out. I have to make the calls, even though I don't like cold calling. I have to make the calls. And I have to allocate very, very strategically my time, my talents, as well as my money and what I'm doing. Before, we're advertising for our company was maybe I will, maybe I won't. Just depends on what's going on. Advertising and proper advertising, I should say, is an absolute necessity now because everyone is, if they're looking for marketing, the competitors I had back then, maybe some of them fell off, but those that fell off, five more came in because everyone now is looking for something to do additionally.
Sure.
So I now added my, you know, my competitors have added because see those big companies that shut down in the recession, all of those marketing specialists, all of the business analysis, all of the developers, guess what they did? They launched their own company.
Sure. In addition, the companies that were out there expanded the net.
Exactly.
When times are great, it's easy to say, oh, no, we don't do that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But when the phone stops ringing and someone calls and says, do you guys do X? All of a sudden, it's, well, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we love to do that.
Call Billy. Get him out here now. You know? So, yeah, absolutely. So I had to learn that I had to really be keen on my niche. I had to be really keen on my delivery. I had to increase my delivery time. Because now people will pay you, but they want it much quicker, much faster, way more efficient. So, you know, we sat down with my team. We sat and was like, how can we do what we do even better? How can we deliver results even better? What do we need to do? How do we stay abreast of it? You know, we stay on top of education, collaborative partnerships like with the BizLink Center. We collaborate all the time. And it is through collaboration why we're still here today.
You know, your comment about really watching your time makes me that much more appreciative that you came here today. The pressure, you know, they just raised the bar a little bit.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
All right. Don't go. Don't leave us, Natasha. Tell us real quick, how, if someone wants to get in touch with you directly, what's the best way to reach you?
Best way, you can just go to the website, visionarypeoplearise.com, or you can give us a call, 678-390-2681.
Excellent. Stick around. We're going to chat with David,
and then we'll
hopefully open it up to a lively discussion.
Awesome.
All right, so David, you're the VP of sales for ExactSource, and I've got a whole bunch of questions for you, but the first one I've got is, what the hell is a purple squirrel?
Yeah, I've been sitting over here Googling that. I mean, I found all kinds of stuff, so.
Yeah, I hope you have a good filter on here.
Yeah, I've set off all kind of alarms and stuff.
Great.
So here.
Oh, well, it's interesting. So the purple squirrel actually is really an old term that we actually kind of brought back up, but in the recruiting world, the purple squirrel is finding the right candidate, the exact candidate that fits a specific position. So, you know, it's one of those things where people in the business world, they're the keys to actually driving the business. And so hiring the right person is that same old deal, getting the right person in the right bus, in the right seat. But the purple squirrel is finding that absolute perfect candidate. So in our process, what we do, that's it, is we find the purple squirrel.
All right, that's cool. So now let's make this, let's circle back. Tell us, you know, let's start from the beginning. Tell us about ExactSource. I just couldn't wait to hear about the purple squirrel. We'll probably talk about them again.
Yeah. So what I always like to tell people is I always start out and I say, we're a dating company. And people go, a dating company? And I said, yep. I said, okay, have you ever heard of eHarmony? And it's kind of that second kind of deer in headlights look like, what is he talking about? They're a dating company, eHarmony? And I said, what eHarmony is to dating is what ExactSource is to hiring. Mm-hmm. So we're a recruiting company, but we do things much, much different than everybody else. So if you think about, you know, eHarmony, we do the same type of thing. So what we will do in terms of finding the purple squirrel or the exact candidate is we will come up with profiles, and we call them exact profiles. And they will be anywhere between, you know, engineering or IT is especially what we do, but we will create these profiles that have different line items. And so when the hiring managers, what they will do is they will complete these profiles and rank them for the ideal candidate. So let's take an example like an environmental. So environmental might say, we're looking for an environmental engineer, and he has to have these skills, these disciplines, these expertise, and so we'll rate those 1 through 4. Okay, what is the ideal person looking for? So tell me about your surly wall design implementation experience on a scale of 1 to 4. Okay, or what is your UST and AST operating compliance experience? So it really gets to be finding that key person. And so the hiring managers then will actually fill out these profiles. We will load these into our software system. And so when we go out and start to find candidates, they will, when they're applying for the position, take the exact same form. And our software system actually matches these two together and will come up with a percentage. Kind of like eHarmony will say, well, these guys are an 87% match based off of what the hiring manager is looking for compared to what the candidates, you know, everything is what they're looking for. They had a deal, gosh, it's probably about 4 months ago on LinkedIn that said the average recruiter looks at a resume for 6 seconds.
6 seconds.
6 seconds. And you could actually see the heat wave of the eyes going over the resume in terms of where they looked and where they went. Well, that's fine. But we're kind of sitting there saying, is that really justification? Because when you're talking to some of these candidates, they're like, and then we say, well, send over your resume. Which one? What do you mean, which one? Well, we've got 3. Okay. And so what happens then is that, you know, because resumes and experience and education and disciplines and everything have gotten to be so intense, people can't put everything on their resume.
Sure.
And so that's really how our business got started about 6 years ago. Was one of our hiring managers was out there talking to an environmental engineer, and the guy said, here's everything that we're looking for. And so we took all the information, posted for the ad, had about 156 different resumes.
Wow.
So we're filtering through each one of those. We get down to 3. And so our managing partner was sitting down talking with the one guy that had the most experience. And so he turns to him and he says, wow, you are absolutely perfect for the position. But the hiring manager said that he's really looking for someone with a minimum of 5 years of split spoon drilling expertise. and the guy looks over and he goes, well, split spoon drilling expertise? I've got 14 years of split spoon drilling expertise. So we're going back through the resume. We said, I don't know. Don't see that on here. And he goes, I didn't think it was important. And it's really from that exchange that we realized that, you know, candidates don't put everything in their resume. And so we really want to make sure that when we're finding that purple squirrel or the exact candidate, we capture everything. So,
well, let me play the other side of the coin for a second. So because you compared this to dating, I want to go out on this limb. Because
sure.
Here's what we know about dating. Here's the fundamental flaw.
Is this where we're going to be glad that this isn't FCC?
Well, only if I revealed only if I put the Google findings out there on Purple Squirrel. But no, but when we think about dating, I mean, here's the fundamental problem.
Yep.
People are on their best behavior. They put their best foot forward, you know. They polish it all up, and look at me, look at me. It's almost like selling a used car, right? You get it all waxed, detailed, tuned up. It's ready to go. Short time after, you find out what you really got. How do you prevent that in the hiring process so that you're really getting the right match? I mean, how do you vet these guys to get the perfect match so it is a long-term harmonious relationship?
Yeah, and that's Andy, it's a great point, and that's really where I think that our process comes into play. So, you know, we do post for the ads, and we do reach out to these people, and we've got a whole staff of people that do nothing but just go out and find these people. But so we'll go through their resumes, just kind of that first step, or when they're applying for the position, and then we'll have a phone conversation and talk with them, and kind of whittle that down to the people that we think are, you know, on the surface qualified. Then they will take our exact profiles, and then they'll start to score them to find out, okay, do they match? I mean, do all the skills, expertise, and discipline? But from there, you know, the next big thing is cultural fit. I mean, we really know that the cultural fit is huge. So we do something that's called Exact View. And so we will do a 4 to 5 minute Skype interview, and we'll record that. So our hiring managers will say, you know what, before I see this person, here are the 4 questions I would love for you to ask. Ask these questions. So when we submit a candidate, it's not just submitting a resume with some notes and saying, hey, listen, this guy or gal is pretty good. we're sitting there saying, here's a resume, here's why this is qualified, here's their exact profile with their overall score and exact percentage, and then you can click on a link and watch a 4 to 5 minute recorded Skype interview to find out, okay, is that person the right person that I want to bring in? And then they can choose and say, you know what, I like the first two or three, but the rest of them, I don't think so. And from there, you know, then it's the hiring managers really continuing to date along. But so the process is in depth, but making that key hire is really critical in today's world. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love that you brought up the cultural fit. I mean, Mark, has there been a week we've had a show that we haven't heard someone talking about the cultural fit? I mean,
no, it seems just to be a huge driver, both in how people hire, you know, for their own employees and who they want to work with as clients.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the other thing, the nice thing about the Exact View is that in today's world, you know, I've got a guy right now moving out to Reno. He says, David, you know, we're going to need 10 people here within the next 2 months. Great. He's in Atlanta right now, but he's moving out to Reno. They're going to have people all over the U.S. So instead of him going out and all of a sudden flying to Boston and Chicago right. and L.A. to interview these people, at least he's got a sense of, you know, okay, these three people are worth, you know, you guys have vetted the process, so we know these guys are somewhat qualified.
So the rating, the 1 to 4,
mm-hmm.
if I'm looking at a resume and someone's got all fours, does that automatically mean that they're a purple squirrel or they're the best candidate? Or do you, is there some type of algorithm or some way that you look at it and go, no, we're looking for, you know, 2s to 3s here, 3 to 4 here, 4, you know, is there, is it as simple as more 4s is better?
If they're all 4s, it's a sales guy.
That's good.
Well, and actually that's why, you know, what our exact profiles really are the best for is for engineers and IT. I mean, so if you were going to sit there and rate yourself and say, all right, for a Java developer, you know, for Kit, you know, 1.4, 1.5, or 1.6, you know, you either know that or you don't.
Right.
Or if you know what a JDBC is for a Java developer, which I've got no clue, but if I did and I had that experience, you could rate yourself and say, hey, I'm a 4. I'm an expert in this. And we're finding that even though this is a self-rated tool, we're using that as a benchmark. So when we go back and we're talking to these people, we're saying, so you rated yourself a 3 on this, a 4 on this. Tell me why. Mm. And so if we're finding a discrepancy in what they're rating themselves,
it's a red flag in another area.
Yep, then they won't go on to the next level.
Yeah.
So although it is, but you think about it, we posted for one position, 138 resumes in the first 2 days. And the hiring manager came back and said, well, I haven't seen a lot from you guys. And I said, well, I said, out of the 138 that you didn't see, you know, only 25 of those were somewhat qualified. Of that, only 2 actually made it to the next process. So we really do work down from there. And the other nice thing is that, like I just kind of mentioned there, it's a great tool for the hiring manager.
Yeah.
So he can come back and say, you rated yourself this. Tell me more about that. So,
well, you know, it's funny you mentioned, you know, he's a sales guy, because in the interviewing that I've done as a manager, I've, you know, I've hired for, you know, admin assistants, brand strategists, namers, and business development people. Uh-huh. And it is absolutely, I think, from my opinion, the easiest assess is the salesperson.
Yep.
Because they're essentially doing their job sitting across the desk.
Yep.
Versus the, you know, the brand strategists and the marketing folks, which is a little bit, you know, that's in between. That's a little bit subjective. You got to have that conversation and kind of get a sense of how they think. But the IT and the engineering, I mean, that seems to be the full other direction. There's so much, either you know it or you don't.
Yeah.
So how is the process different, or how does the process differ in the recruiting world with such a technical base?
Well, and that's, you know, with regards to the technical people for the engineering and IT, you know, if I answer the question right, is that, you know, bottom line is finding these people and getting them, because the lack of talent right now in IT and engineering is, I mean, it's unbelievable. To find a really good Java developer here in Atlanta is like finding a needle in a haystack. And a lot of these people are passive candidates. They don't want to go, or they're just sitting back in the deal. So they're not out there.
So no one's told them we're in a recession and it's supposed to be hard to find a job.
I just told my 16-year-old a couple weeks ago, I said, hey, buddy, I said, you want a job for life? Be a wastewater engineer. I said, you will have a job forever there.
And he jumped up and down. And
I was at a golf tournament a couple months ago, and I had spoken to the CEO on the 10th hole, and I said, boy, wish I could have 20 wastewater engineers. And he goes, David, I would take 17 of them right now. So it's just, they're in such high demand. So that's why going through the process that we do and filling out these profiles, what we've done is, since we're a national recruiter, as of last week, we had 11,351 exact profiles in our database Wow. of engineers and IT across the country. So it's nice because when somebody says, hey, listen, we're posting for a job in Houston, Texas, you know, we can go into our database, we can drop down by skills, we can drop down by rating. So there's a chance that we might actually have the purple squirrel in our database already, Right. which is kind of nice. And kind of back on the sales piece, one thing is that because we do a lot of sales as well, one of the things is that exact interview or exact view is just critical.
Yeah.
Hiring managers love that because, you know, they can say, okay, that guy is even, he's selling himself in those four questions.
Sure.
So it's a great way for them to go, ooh, all right, they've got some ability or not at all.
All right. So even though the unemployment is down a bit, it's Yep. still high. You know, we like it to be, you know, under six. It's, you know, down from 10, somewhere around 8.
Yep.
How is that impacting what you're doing?
For us, you know, and I think it's kind of going back to that same thing, is that for engineering and IT, there are more jobs out there than there actually is people to fill them. So, you know, I mean, unemployment for that is, it's a different world. They're just really, really difficult to find. So unemployment, that doesn't really make a difference for us, or the 8%.
Right.
You know, you got to wonder if it's that, you know, when that kid, that person is, you know, in high school and they're thinking about their careers, and some of these that aren't so attractive and seem so cool, those are the ones that are looking pretty sexy right now.
Well,
you know,
and
being employed is pretty cool.
It is. And to your point is that what happened then is that, you know, for years and years ago, engineering or IT was kind of thought of as maybe that nerdy thing, and
Sure.
you know, people had gotten into it years ago, and then what happened was is there's this huge lull, and then for a good 10 to 14 year period, it just sort of dropped off. So you see this huge gap right now in the marketplace that there's just not that many, a certain segment of the people. So what's happening now is there's a lot of schools out there that are really trying to promote. And I was just making a presentation in Texas a couple months ago, and on the radio, it is advertising for kids to come to college for engineering for their particular program. I mean, they're really going all out. So you're starting to see, you know, an upswing in terms of the younger kids kind of coming back into that.
Well, let me ask a question here, just a little off topic, but something that maybe you might have a finger on the pulse of. We talked about hiring culturally, right? You want to get some people that fit into your culture, but we've seen somewhat of a shift in the culture of organizations in the sense that there's an entitlement generation now. And, you know, you got these kids out there, and they're smart. You know, they're intelligent, and they have some skill sets behind them, but they're not willing to earn a thing. They want everything now. You know, you pay them $90,000 a year to be your Java developer, and they still think they're doing you the favor, right? You know, you're not doing them the favor. They're doing you the favor by willing to work for that price. I mean, how do you deal with that, and what are you finding that employers are facing in that obstacle between, hey, I need the talent, but I really don't want the person, the attitude, the entitlement that's coming behind it?
Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of times what we're talking about there is, we're talking with the hiring managers, is really communication between these people. And that's such a key factor that we're finding, is that I sat into a leadership business program, and it was the same thing, is that we had, it was basically almost a split room, is that, you know, kind of the, you know, 40, 50, or 60-year-olds, and then a bunch of 20-year-olds. And really what kind of came out of that was almost not more of an entitlement, but a lack of communication. So what they're looking for is communication. They're actually thinking, I'm smarter than my boss.
Yes.
And, but, you know, I think that there's been between, and I hate to kind of say this, but between the texting and the tweeting and stuff like that, there has been this, I'll just text them or tweet them or send them an email instead of actually having a communication and talking to them. But when we were sitting in this room and everybody started really talking with each other, really what it got down to was is that, yeah, that was the entitlement and that was the expectations, but once they started communicating with some of the older generation, they started to find a common gap in terms of where they were thinking in their heads. So it just goes back to, you know, whether that's a small company or a large company, it's just that how do you communicate in an effective manner? And that's where a lot of people have kind of fallen down the job personally.
The texting reminded me, made me think of social media, which also seems to come up in every conversation about building businesses, building brands.
Oh, yeah.
When, I don't want to date anyone in the room, not as in date, but, you know, age. got to put that in context, given the earlier conversation. No offense to, no, anyway. So back when I was applying for my first job, I walked around in a suit with a leather portfolio with my resumes all tucked in the left pocket, and I had my clean notepad on the right, and I would mail them and fax them and look in the newspaper, and this is the old world.
Yep.
It's changed a ton. We've got all kinds of social media, specifically LinkedIn, mm-hmm. seems to be the first thing everyone turns to. If they don't have a LinkedIn profile, it's the very first thing they do when they start to get wind that they're going to be looking for a job. And we all know when we see our LinkedIn contacts sending requests for recommendations,
yep.
we see that, we go, oh no, you know, we know what's coming.
Yep.
So how is LinkedIn factored into this? Is it made it easier or just opened up the field of competition and made it harder for candidates to look for and ultimately secure a new position?
So it's a great question. In the beginning, you know, LinkedIn was probably one of the best tools for recruiters. I mean, in terms of reaching out, touching people, introducing themselves as a recruiter, introducing them as a company, positions that they might be available. I mean, because there's something called LinkedIn Recruiter besides just regular LinkedIn. So, you know, and we're part of that. It's a great tool in terms of reaching out and finding these people. Like everything that's really great in the beginning, it's kind of gone a little overboard. So you think about having, you know, thousands and thousands of recruiters now sending out emails to these people. So these passive candidates are now mm-hmm. starting to get hit with, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 recruiters a day. So, you know, although LinkedIn is such a great tool and it will be for, you know, many, many years, like everything, it can be a little abused in terms of, you know, too much touching in terms of people, but it's a great tool for finding those good candidates.
All right, so I got one last question for you.
Sure.
Two purple squirrels walk into an interview.
Oh, jeez.
Does the tie go to the Toastmaster?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And to your other point there is that, you know, you talk about, you know, networking and stuff like that. Is I've got a lot of people that will call me and say, you know, David, you know, I need a new job. You know, do you have anything available? Well, if they don't fall within our sweet spot or if we don't have a position, you know, I try and help them out and say the best thing that you can do is, I mean, your LinkedIn profile is great, but you got to get out there. You've got to get out there and you've got to meet someone and go to these meetups, go to the networking groups. And so I always tell people is that Toastmasters, you know, what a great way to increase your public speaking, increase your communication, increase your leadership skills. And so, you know, I've been the president of MIC Toast, which is the McKesson Toastmasters, you know, about 5 years ago. And it's a great, great organization. So I tell people is that, okay, what a great way if you're targeting McKesson to go to their Toastmasters group. You get an hour's worth of, you know, understanding in terms of how to be a better speaker, how to be a better leader, networking with the people within that organization. So tons of benefits there. And I always tell them as well is that in today's world, people don't want to see a resume. They want to see your marketing plan. So show me the highlights in terms of what you're doing. And if you're coming to me and I don't have an opportunity for you, give me those 12 companies that you're targeting. So what is the industry? What is the company? What is the size? What is the department? What's your job function? Really start to narrow that down. Because I tell them, the more specific you can be, the better. Help me help you. And so I can go back and I can say, oh, well, McKesson, I can introduce you to this person, this person, this person, right. UPS, here, 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 Coca-Cola. I've got 3 people there. But the other 9 companies you put here, I have nobody else.
Right.
But so that's what I recommend.
Excellent. All right, we're coming pretty close to running out of time. But before we do that, we're going to chat in a couple minutes or for a couple minutes longer. But I want to make sure we get your the best way to get in touch with you, David. If someone is sitting on the edge of their seat right now and wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
There you go. So I would say go to www.exactsource.com or contact me directly. This is a really hard number, but it's 678-777-7867. 7-7.
Oh, that's just not fair.
I know.
Missed it by one. Right?
I've had that one for a while.
Did you make the, when you were getting the number, did you keep having them say, nope, not that one, next, 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 or was that just luck of the draw?
No, this was in the old days when you actually could pick your number.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, so had that one for a while.
I've got a 10-digit number, and I think none of the numbers are the same, which I know isn't numerically possible, but it took about a year for me to remember my own cell phone number.
There you go.
Because I apparently was the last one handed out.
That's great.
I never give that number. I should use, if I had the Pokin, then yeah, I could use that to, anytime someone asks, I can high four and pass the number that way.
Yeah, I want to get one of those.
The BizLink Center.
There we go.
There you go.
All right. So I've got one question, or maybe at least a couple, maybe a couple beyond that, that might tie all this together. With we've heard that getting that next job can be a job in itself,
mm-hmm.
And getting out there, we know, is a big part of that. I mean, David, you just said that's
yeah.
a big part of it.
Oh yeah.
Are you, Pamela? Are you seeing people utilize your space as their headquarters for their job search? Is that one of the reasons you see people coming in?
That's a great one. We haven't seen a lot of that yet, although we do get people that come through, first of all, because sometimes they think we're a staffing agency. So they come through
exact
that, and so they're
resourced.
Curious.
Exactly.
Hello.
Right. So they're curious about the space, but then when they see it, they do see that it's a great place. And we did have one gentleman, it was his own business, but he was using it as his home base mm-hmm. for getting out there and trying to find more of his clients, all of that. But I love it. So those that are out there looking for jobs, we definitely are a great place for you to come to for that. But we also have, in talking about the collaboration, there is a kind of job search location over at the Goodwill that's across the street from us. Mm-hmm. So we work with building collaborations with them because they have a lot of those computers that are set up where people can do those job searches. So in doing that now, I've also done certain things like reaching out. Our Barnes & Nobles, unfortunately, down the street from us closed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm like, these people are going to be displaced. They need some place to come in. And they aren't necessarily all business people. Mm-hmm. So the space is definitely great for those that are trying to do that. So a lot of the job search people are also in the interim looking at starting their own businesses. So that's kind of where the tie ends up coming in and where they see the connection for them that they can be in front of other businesses that have opportunities that they may be able to get into as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talk to a lot of entrepreneurs mm-hmm. and you find that that nudge mm-hmm. to finally start that business mm-hmm. was a layoff.
Right.
Or
absolutely. A lot of them start up because of that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's very difficult to leave that security blanket or that mm-hmm. it seems kind of crazy to quit a good job.
Right.
But when, you know, when there's that nudge.
So I was looking at me because she knows that's exactly where my brain is. Do I leave this?
But do I want to get
gotta
a
do
Friday
it.
Check?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Takes you back to the Office Space days, right? Samir, not going to work here anymore.
Right. That's great. All right. Well, guys, thank you very much for taking the time. Pamela, David,
absolutely.
Natasha, really
you.
Appreciate it. This was a fun show.
Thank you.
This has been Inside Out Radio. We're brought to you by the brand experts at 800 Degrees. Join us each week, Thursday at 10 a.m. And remember, brands are built from the inside out. It all comes back to that original, inspiring idea that became a brand.